From the University of Central Florida's Center for Distributed Learning, I'm Kelvin Thompson.
And I'm Tom Cavanaugh.
And you're listening to TopCast, the Teaching Online podcast. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Kelvin. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. Coming fresh off of our last live recording at the Online Learning Consortium, we're back in the studio today.
Does that make us not live?
No, we're simulated.
You would think if I was simulated, I'd be a whole lot better than this.
Yeah.
Something.
All right. So we've got a new topic for our many, many fans out there listening.
At least two.
Yeah. That's many. And so for those of you that may be catching us for the first time and working your way through our vast library, binging on TopCast.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
The first thing we always have to ask is that burning question to Kelvin of what is in the thermos?
Burning question.
Yes. Let's hope it's not burning.
That's right. That would be bad. Well, today in the thermos is this is a little bit different for us, is a coffee I did not brew, Tom.
What?
Stolen coffee. No, I bought it. I actually just went out a little while ago to a popular coffee chain named after a character from Moby Dick. And bought the fresh brewed coffee that I put in the thermos. Let me pour you some here and let's see what you got here. See what you think of it.
Kelvin's pouring from his Disney-themed thermos.
Yeah, it's not the standard thermos. It's my backup thermos.
Okay, that tastes familiar.
Does it?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it doesn't taste exactly like what you're used to because this is not your typical Starbucks coffee. It is a single origin coffee from what's called the Starbucks Reserve. Brewed fresh on the spot with this thing called the Clover Brewing System, which I'm kind of in love with. I found it in New York years ago, and I thought, man, this thing is cool. I have not had a bad cup of coffee from the Clover. That's right. So they marry together two things. They put together small batch single origin coffees and this really cool computerized brewing system. And, you know, there it is at Starbucks. It's high-end kind of stuff. Now, it costs a little bit more than the coffee of the day, but the quality's good, and it's, you know, relatively easy to get, at least at some of the higher-end Starbucks locations, but you pay for that. So I thought this coffee was a good choice for today's episode.
So I kind of know what today's theme is about.
Do you? That's good, because so I was just figured I'd throw that stuff out, and you'd go with it and make something up.
Let me take a guess, then. We've been talking a lot here locally at our institution, but I know that there has been a national conversation about the concept of the Iron Triangle.
The Iron Triangle. Didn't the Iron Curtain come down?
Yes, but the Iron Triangle went up.
Oh, okay.
So the Iron Triangle, the general premise is that you kind of have three domains relative to an initiative. Quality, cost, and access, and specifically we're talking about higher education. And then you can't really impact any one or two positively without negatively impact the other. And it's really hard, for example, to increase access without reducing quality or to decrease cost without reducing quality or something like that. So how do you impact all three at the same time is the kind of the big challenge of the day in higher education.
Kind of like building a better mousetrap. If you can figure that out, the world's going to beat a path to your door.
Exactly, and maybe some students will graduate.
That'd be nice.
So I get your coffee. It's sort of about access and cost.
Yeah.
And quality.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get it. That makes some sense.
Iron coffee.
Yeah. Or maybe we need an iron mug.
That's right. That's actually pretty good. I didn't say this was, this one's kind of interesting, by the way. This is a Vietnam. I haven't had coffee from Vietnam before. This is a Vietnam, they call it Da Lat, I think. But it's not bad.
Okay.
I kind of like it.
I didn't know Starbucks was quite that exotic.
Only certain Starbucks.
Okay.
Yeah. You got to knock three times, and they let you in.
Well, so we'll dive into talking a little bit more about the Iron Triangle, but I think it's probably worth saying that you and I have talked about this as a framework for discussing topics relative to higher education and technology in higher education through the next few months. Maybe it's it's a theme that I think we're probably going to revisit in various ways as the podcast continues.
Maybe an occasional mini series or something.
Yeah. Maybe not every month that we'll talk about it, but definitely something that we'll return to from time to time.
We find the concepts to be important and useful and something that we should be thinking and talking about, right?
Yeah, I think they definitely resonate with not just us, but a lot of people. A lot of people working in higher education today.
No, I think that's right. So, do you know where does this Iron Triangle business come from? Other than, you know, I always joke about the often photocopied little papers that get stuck to people's filing cabinets, and you know, the little cartoon figures for their laugh, and you want it when, and then I've seen these things, good, cheap, fast, pick any two, and it's not too far removed from this Iron Triangle thing.
No, it's not, but the Iron Triangle is actually really a thing.
It's a thing.
For example, recently Ithaca SNR, which is a consulting and kind of a think tank mm-hmm. group, did a case study on UCF, and they actually put in the citations and the references for the individual who came up with the concept specifically of the Iron Triangle in higher education. So that particular, and we can talk about that mm-hmm. that case study if you want, but that particular case study is interesting in that it outlines what UCF is doing to address the Iron Triangle. But if somebody's really interested in sort of the origins of mm-hmm. that in higher education, I would encourage you to go look at the citations and references, which are pretty thorough.
Yeah.
And to kind of dig into the details there.
I don't know. I don't remember. I have to do that now. I don't recall what they say in the references. The first time I saw it was in this public agenda report. College presidents talk about costs, access, and quality, and they kind of use that. But it may predate that. That was back in like 2010, 2011, something like that.
Yeah.
But I did write down this quote from that report because I think it's good. It sort of formally states the stuff that you said before. The three main factors in higher education, cost, quality, and access, which you could debate, are those the three main factors in higher education? They exist in what we call an iron triangle. These factors are linked in an unbreakable reciprocal relationship. That's kind of good for the coffee, such that any change in one inevitably impacts the others.
Exactly. That says it way better than I did.
I like what you said. That's good. That sounds like education speak, but it's a thing. So there's reports.
So yeah, it's a thing. There is a body of scholarship around it, and certainly a lot of kind of policy thinking and people who are thinking about the space of higher education have had a lot to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe do you want to start with kind of what we're doing here, and then we'll go broader.
Yeah, sure.
So in this Ithaca case study, they talk about two specific things that we're doing here to try to impact the Iron Triangle mm-hmm. and not sacrifice any one of those arms of the triangle. And that those two things are our transfer partnerships, our partnerships we have with our transfer institutions, and specifically through our Direct Connect to UCF program, mm-hmm. and online learning. And through the use of those two things, we have been able to impact the constraints of the Iron Triangle in a very positive way. You know, we haven't figured it all out mm-hmm. yet, but I think we have started to move the needle in ways that a lot of other schools haven't.
So let's use that as a checklist. Can I do this to you?
Mm-hmm.
Let's put you on the spot too much. So if we've got cost, access, and quality, so why don't we hit with those two things here at UCF, just as a little mini case study here, if it doesn't go down a rabbit trail too much, the things you said about UCF. So how do those things impact cost?
All right. So for example, the partnerships with the state colleges, a student could start their education, get their associate's degree at a partner institution, and then transfer to UCF. And frankly, the tuition at a state or community college mm-hmm. is a lot less than at a university like UCF.
Mm-hmm.
So cost,
mm-hmm.
but it is also impacting access mm-hmm. at the same time. Without necessarily sacrificing either one of them, they both happen at the same time.
Now, can we talk about access for a second? Because I've been in, maybe it's just the people I hang out with, I don't know, but I remember being in some state meeting, and the idea we were talking about the Iron Triangle stuff, and the access thing came up, and boy, we were all over the map. We were talking about everything from responsive website design for mobile devices to universal design for learning kind of stuff to, you know, making it easy for people who don't have a college education to get a college education.
Right.
How do we think that we generally understand access in this context?
Well, in my mind, as I was just saying that, I was talking more about the latter of what you talked about, about providing access to an education for those who might otherwise find it challenging to access education.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I guess you can define it for yourself however broadly you think you want to. If you want to include accessibility, like for students who need accommodations in that category, international students, students who speak another language other than English as their first language. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to include people in that term of access. And so you wouldn't want to marginalize any of those, I guess, depending upon your institutional mission.
Right.
And then let's look at the third leg.
Quality.
So maybe what I just suggested by having our transfer institution partnerships positively impacts cost. Positively impacts access, because frankly, some of these students are getting into UCF that they might not have been able to get into with test scores. But by proving their ability, by achieving an associate's degree at a certain level of performance, they can earn their way into an institution like ours. And then for quality, you might say maybe the quality isn't necessarily better, but it's certainly no worse. It's exactly the same probably that they would have gotten otherwise, because they're still coming to UCF. There's no reason that there's a degradation of quality. So we haven't negatively impacted any part of that triangle in that model. And in two legs, I think we've positively impacted it. There might be others from some of our regional campuses that could articulate some of even more of the benefits associated with that particular relationship.
But that's cool. That's a cool little sort of mini case study, micro case study. That's kind of a neat thing. And I think as we proceed with this little occasional mini series, hopefully we can kind of unbundle some of these, what do we say, angles, sides, components, pieces, whatever they are. You know, but maybe we can take a minute or two and unbundle them a little bit more. We started to do that a little bit. Like, for instance, quality. Quality, you know, I've thought about some, I've talked about some, I've written about some, and like our colleague here at UCF, Chuck Jubin, likes to quote from Robert Pirsig's The Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. There's a little, lead-in. I didn't write it out here, but it has this thing about, like, quality. You know, the moment you think you've defined it, it kind of goes, or what, you don't know what quality is, and there's this whole thing. You know, what is it? And we try to operationalize, and we've talked about this. You know, you make course evaluation rubrics, and you go down this road, and you think, are we missing the forest for the trees? You know, how does this work? So when we talk about quality, at least in our online blended digital learning technology mediated whatever context, what do you think we're even talking about with quality?
Well, I mean, that could be a series of podcasts.
Oh, there's an idea. Let's write that down.
But I would say, at a minimum, for online learning, for example, you can't evaluate it with different rules, with a different set of criteria than you would face-to-face, because I don't think that's fair.
Right.
So if you evaluate quality, for example, based upon student success, do they get a passing grade or whatever in a particular course, then look at the blended and online courses in the same light. Are they achieving success measures at the same rate as you know, more traditional courses? That is one measure of quality. There are lots of them, because I get challenged on whether or not grades is a fair determinant of learning. And
What else you got?
I mean, that's true. I mean, and I don't argue with it, because I don't necessarily disagree.
Right.
But grades are data that you have access to.
That's right.
And you can compare across a lot of sectors through grades. But the other question back is, so, you know, what are you doing in the classroom that's so much better than grades? And there isn't usually an answer for that. But people are very quick to challenge the quality of online learning, but without giving me some sort of an alternative measure that's better. Now, we've done some things, just a quick cul-de-sac here. We've done some things like we've looked at student performance in courses that had a prerequisite based upon the modality of the prerequisite. Because that that's more about learning than grades. And what we have found is that there's really no measurable difference. What was a bigger criterion was how much time elapsed between taking the prerequisite and then the subsequent course. Mm-hmm. The longer the time lag, the worse the student performance, regardless of modality. Mm-hmm. There have been some other kinds of measures we looked at. For example, do students complete their degrees faster with online learning? And here, mm-hmm. that's not really been the case because right. it's so ubiquitous. Everybody's yep. taking online learning.
Right, right.
And I could list probably several more. But you know, we've tried to get at that question.
Yeah.
But so far, grades has been a particularly useful one. And it's yeah. it's equatable across different modalities.
But it is only one data dimension. Like, I mean, we look at success from withdrawal rates and student satisfaction
right,
and faculty
right.
satisfaction. And I kind of think it's that. I think it's this... What would that be? What's that artistic thing, like pointillism? Or something? It's all these little, or impressionism, all these little pieces come together to form a whole, you know, kind of triangulating. I think there is something to that because it's a rhetorical device, right? That if you have these disparate elements and you go, well, like we talk about blended learning, right? We've talked about that on just about every metric, at least here and a lot of other places, blended learning, quote unquote, outperforms online learning or face-to-face. And what we mean by that is, oh, look at success rates. Oh, look at withdrawal rates. Oh, look at satisfaction rates. Oh, look at, you know, and then you've got a story.
Right.
And you kind of go, well, more likely than not,
yeah.
it's a thing.
You start to build a critical mass of evidence
yeah.
that it's hard to argue against.
Yeah, and so I guess in the general quality sense, I guess, you know, maybe we are talking about a bit of a portfolio of stuff. But, yeah, okay, that's good. What about affordability? Well, you know, you talked about the little mini UCF case study, but there's a lot of ways to move that needle, or are there? Because, you know, it's like tuition's like the third rail, right?
Yeah, and at state institutions like ours, you have a lot less flexibility to dink around with tuition mm-hmm. prices.
Mm-hmm.
Private schools have more flexibility mm-hmm. to potentially change tuition, but yet many of them are more tuition dependent
yeah.
because they don't have state subsidies.
Right.
Some state schools don't have state subsidies.
Ba-dum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum. So, you know, there are various ways to kind of get at that affordability question, and they could be beyond the tuition. Something that we're talking about here and that some of our sister institutions in the state have done is to play around with fees.
Mm-hmm.
So for an online student who's exclusively online and will not be coming to campus, can you reduce their out-of-pocket costs by eliminating campus-based fees?
Right.
And that can be significant.
Seems simple enough.
Right. Yeah. And hopefully it will help students afford
yeah.
things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I guess, you know, we hear things about textbook costs, right?
Right.
Not only are they causing students to walk around hunched over because they're huge, they also cost an arm and a leg. And so, what can we do about that? And so, it seems like if you can affect textbook pricing mm-hmm. without sacrificing quality,
sure.
You know,
I mean,
then
I think that's
a thing,
a given. Yeah, you
yeah.
have to be able to say we're going to do this thing to impact costs. So, like, use open educational resources
yeah.
for our courses, and it won't cost students what it would cost for a textbook, but it can't be worse.
Right.
It's got to be
right.
at least do no harm
that's right.
hopefully improve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess we talked about access a little bit already, what that means, but I guess we didn't drill down into what are the things you think that when we talk about removing the barriers to a college education for folks who don't have one, what do we think that looks like?
Well, something that we've talked about in the past includes different kinds of educational models, like competency-based
mm-hmm,
education.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is the curriculum and the sequence different, but the pricing models
mm-hmm,
can be very
mm-hmm.
different. And for a motivated student, it could actually work out to be much more cost-effective for them. For a student who maybe is less motivated, it could end up being it could end up being more expensive. So that student has to do that kind of cost benefit in their head and know what kind of a performer they are. So if they did, for example, time-based pricing, so you pay $3,000 every 6 months, take as much mm-hmm. content, take as many assessments as you can in a competency-based
mm-hmm.
model, if for a motivated student, that could be better.
Right.
Or a student who can perform. But for somebody who needs extra time or doesn't have the
mm-hmm.
the kind of grit or
right.
maybe needs to be more deliberate, maybe they've been out of school for a while and need more time to kind of reacclimate, that might actually be financially worse for them.
Right.
But I give credit to the schools that are experimenting with that because that's different. You're not going to impact the Iron Triangle by continuing to do things the same way.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. That's just about, I think, a good place to leave it, just about, right? I mean, I think what I hear you say in there is if we want to innovate in online and teaching and learning, our path is likely going to involve one or more of these three components of the Iron Triangle: access, quality, and cost.
Absolutely. And without necessarily, you must improve at least some of them, and you can't hurt any of them in order for this to work going forward, you know?
Yeah, that's good. Well, why don't we leave it there? That's a good spot.
Okay. So before we close, let me just kind of ask our listeners that
there's a quiz?
Yeah, it's a quiz.
Oh.
Yeah. How much do you like us or not? If you have enjoyed listening to the Topcast, do us a favor and go out to iTunes and leave us a rating and a review, because that helps to bump it up in the rankings and helps other people find it if they're looking for this kind of content. And to remind everybody that at topcast.online.ucf.edu, we always have all of the archive shows, as well as all of the resources and links to articles and things we've referenced. And if you want to know where to find out more about the coffee that Kelvin talks about, those are all linked out there as well.
That's right, because who wouldn't want to know that?
Yeah, well, some of these stories have been fascinating. I've learned a lot.
There you go.
Just sitting here across the table from you.
That's good. Well, until next time, for Topcast, I'm Kelvin.
And I'm Tom.
See you online.